And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 9 minutes after 11 here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 66. This is April 3rd, 2016, and to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf, who has very large dimples. They seem to be getting bigger. I think they're growing.
Since last night, they got bigger?
Yeah, since last night. Oh, Mike Estella, the executive producer of this show, is in front of me here, and then the best in the business, Dan Long, is our producer. He is in the booth. What's up, Dan? How are you?
What's happening? Doing good.
Yeah? All right. We've got a great lineup of classic radio shows for all of our listeners tonight and into the wee hours of the morning, because we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. 3 hours every Saturday night we're here, and 3 hours every Sunday night. Same time both nights, 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And tonight, we're going to spotlight Orson Welles. We have three radio shows that he appeared in. The first is the Mercury Summer Theater with The Hitchhiker. And if you've ever heard The Hitchhiker on radio, you're going to love it. And if you haven't, you may even love it more. And then we have Suspense. He stars in The Marvelous Barostro. And then The Fred Allen Show. He guests on The Fred Allen Show. So good comedy in our third hour. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the dance drama High Strung, which follows a ballet student as she starts training at a prestigious performing arts school in New York.
All right, what do they win if they can guess?
This is exciting. It's a pair of tickets to Sensory Overload at the Montgomery Club. This is on April 14th. It's a three-hour foodie adventure.
Ah, all right. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She played Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and you'll hear her right here in this clip, trying to seduce Owen Wilson's character in Wedding Crashers.
You've been playing cat and mouse with me ever since you came here.
Mrs. Clear, I don't...
Call me Cat.
Okay. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Name that celebrity. We'll find our winner after this break.
Let's play some Celebrity Scoop and hear that movie clip one more time.
You've been playing cat and mouse with me ever since you came here.
Mrs. Clear, I don't...
Call me Cat.
We have Steve on the line from North Riverside. Hey, Steve.
Evening. How's everything?
Great. We're glad you called in, and we're hoping that you can name that celebrity.
Sounds like Jane Seymour.
You are right, Steve, and you are a winner. You've won a pair of tickets to Sensory Overload at the Montgomery Club on April 14th. It's a three-hour foodie adventure. I'm hoping you enjoy food.
I'm going to start fasting.
There you go. You can get details and tickets at chicagotribune.com/sensoryoverload. Steve, thanks a lot. We hope you enjoy that.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. You have a live read there, Miss Wolf.
Yes, 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 yes.
Or Mrs. Wolf.
Whatever you call me, I'll just do it. It is a sad fact. Nursing home negligence is a serious problem. Neglect of elderly residents happens when nursing homes are understaffed. Nursing home negligence includes medication errors, malnutrition and dehydration, falls, pressure sores, and failing to follow doctor's orders. If you suspect a loved one is a victim of negligence or abuse in a nursing home, call Konasek and Dillon. The law firm of Konasek and Dillon will advise and help your family through the painful ordeal of injuries or death caused by nursing home negligence. Konasek and Dillon understands that turning the care of a loved one over to a nursing home or professional caregiver is one of life's most difficult decisions. You deserve only the best care for your loved ones in return. Protect your loved ones. Call the law offices of Konasek and Dillon at 630-262-9655. Consultations are always free. Konasek and Dillon, that's 630-262-9655.
All right. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night playing the best in classic radio. And this month, we're trying something a little, I wouldn't say different, but we're spotlighting a celebrity and playing three radio shows. Last night, we spotlighted Frank Sinatra. So if you missed that, there's a podcast. I don't know if it's up yet, though. For some reason, our podcast from yesterday's show is not up. So I think we're working on that. But you can hear Frank Sinatra in three shows on our podcast once it's up. And tonight, we are spotlighting Orson Welles. And we have three radio shows that Orson Welles appeared in. And the first one, we're going to tune it in right now, is the Mercury Summer Theater. And, of course, if you're an Orson Welles fan, you know that he had a radio series called the Mercury Theater on the air, and it became very famous when he broadcast The War of the Worlds. And the Mercury Theater on the air came on the air in 1937 or 38, I believe, and it was an hour-long show. And then years later, in 1946, they revived the program as a 30-minute show, and it had some terrific classics of literature in there. It was sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon, and Orson Welles reprised his starring role on that series as well. The composer was Bernard Herrmann, who Alfred Hitchcock used to use a lot to score his films. And his supporting cast were great radio actors in New York, Agnes Moorehead, William Allen, Alice Frost, Mercedes McCambridge, Lorraine Tuttle, Earl Ross, to name a few. We have a very cool kind of supernatural thriller to start things off. This is going back to June 21st, 1946. It's called The Hitchhiker. It was written by Lucille Fletcher. I interviewed her. We're not going to play that interview tonight, but I've interviewed her, and we will play that interview. Pretty cool, talking about how she created this story. So here's Orson Welles in part one now of the Mercury Summer Theater.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles, your producer of a special series of broadcasts presented by the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon. The Mercury Summer Theater of the Air. Ladies and gentlemen, the element of suspense is so vital to our story tonight that our sponsors, the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, are omitting their usual commercial message during the intermission between the acts so that our play will go uninterrupted from spooky start to spooky finish. We of the Mercury reckon that a story doesn't have to appeal to the heart, it can also appeal to the spine. Sometimes you want your heart to be warm, sometimes you want your spine to tingle. Well, the tingling, it's to be hoped, will be quite audible as you listen tonight to a classic among radio thrillers. Its author is one of the most gifted of all the writers who've ever worked for this medium, Lucille Fletcher, who wrote the greatest single radio script ever written. Sorry, wrong number. The title of this, her terrifying little tale of Gru for this evening, is another spine tingler by name, The Hitchhiker. I am in an auto camp on Route 66, just west of Gallup, New Mexico. If I tell it, maybe it'll help me. It'll keep me from going crazy. But I must tell this quickly. I'm not crazy now. I feel perfectly well. Perfectly well. Except that I'm running a slight temperature. My name is Ronald Adams. I'm 36 years of age, unmarried, tall, dark, with a black mustache. I drive a 1940 Ford V8, license number 6V7989. I was born in Brooklyn. All this I know. I know that I'm at this moment perfectly sane. That it is not me who's gone mad, but something else. Something utterly beyond my control. But I must speak quickly. At any moment, the link with life may break. This may be the last thing I ever tell on Earth. The last night I ever see the stars. Six days ago, I left Brooklyn to drive to California.
Goodbye, son. Good luck to you, my boy.
Goodbye, Mother. Here, give me a kiss, and then I'll go.
I'll come out with you to the car.
Oh, it's raining. Stay here at the door.
Oh.
Hey, what's this, tears?
Oh, it's just the trip, Ronald. I wish you weren't driving.
Oh, Mother, there you go again. People do it every day.
I know, but you'll be careful, won't you? Promise me you'll be extra careful. Don't fall asleep or drive fast. Or pick up any strangers
now,
on the road.
Strangers? Don't you worry. There isn't anything going to happen. It's just 8 days of perfectly simple driving on smooth, decent, civilized roads with a hot dog or a hamburger stand every 10 miles.
I was in excellent spirits. Drive ahead. Even the loneliness seemed like a lark. But I reckoned without him. Crossing Brooklyn Bridge that morning in the rain, I saw a man leaning against the cables. He seemed to be waiting for a lift. There were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. He was carrying a cheap overnight bag in one hand. He was thin, nondescript, with a cap pulled down over his eyes. He stepped off the walk, and if I hadn't swerved, I'd have hit him. I almost did. Almost did hit him. Now, I would have forgotten him completely, except that just an hour later, while crossing the Pulaski Skyway over the Jersey Flats, I saw him again. At least he looked like the same person. He was standing now with one thumb pointing west. I couldn't figure out how he'd got there, but I thought maybe one of those fast trucks had picked him up, beat me to the Skyway, and let him off. I didn't stop for him. Then, late that night, I saw him again. It was on the new Pennsylvania Turnpike between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh. It's 265 miles long with a very high speed limit. I was just slowing down for one of the tunnels when I saw him standing under an arc light by the side of the road. I could see him quite distinctly. The bag, the cap, even the spots of fresh rain spattered over his shoulders. He hailed me this time. Stepped on the gas like a shot. That's lonely country through the Alleghenies, and I had no intention of stopping. Besides, the coincidences, or whatever it was, gave me the willies. I stopped at the next gas station.
Yes, sir.
Fill her up, will you?
Check your oil?
No, thanks.
Nice night, ain't it?
Yes. Yeah, it hasn't been raining here lately, has it?
Not a drop of rain all week.
Oh, no? I suppose that hasn't done your business any harm.
Well, people drive through here all kinds of weather. Mostly business, though. Ain't many pleasure cars out in the turnpike this season of the year.
I guess not. What about hitchhikers?
Hitchhikers here?
Why, what's the matter? Don't you ever see any?
A guy'd be a fool who started out to hitchhike on this road. Look at it.
Then you never see anybody?
Nope. Maybe they get a lift before the turnpike starts. I mean, you know, just before the toll house. But then it's a mighty long ride. Most cars wouldn't pick up a guy for that long a ride. This is pretty lonesome country here, mountains and woods.
Yeah.
You ain't seen nobody like that, have you?
Oh, no. It's just a technical question.
Oh, I see. Well, that'll be $1.49 with the tax.
The thing gradually passed from my mind as coincidence. I had a good night's sleep in Pittsburgh. I didn't think about the man all next day until just outside of Zanesville, Ohio, I saw him again. It was a bright, sunshiny afternoon. The peaceful Ohio fields, brown with the autumn stubble, lay dreaming in the golden light. I was driving slowly, drinking it in, when the road suddenly ended in a detour. In front of the barrier, he was standing. Let me explain about his appearance before I go on. I repeat, there was nothing sinister about him. He was as drab as a mud fence, nor was his attitude menacing. He merely stood there, waiting, almost drooping a little. The cheap overnight bag in his hand. He looked as though he'd been waiting there for hours. And he hailed me. He started to walk forward.
Hello! Hello!
I'd stopped the car, of course, for the detour. For a few minutes, I couldn't seem to find the new road. I realized he must be thinking that I'd stopped for him.
Hello!
No, I'm not just now. I'm sorry.
Going to California?
No,
No, not today. The other way. I'm going to New York. Sorry.
After I got the car back onto the road again, I felt like a fool. Yet the thought of picking him up, of having him sit beside me, was somehow unbearable. Yet at the same time, I felt more than ever unspeakably alone. Hour after hour went by. The fields, the towns ticked off one by one. The lights changed. I knew now that I was going to see him again. And though I dreaded the sight, I caught myself searching the side of the road, waiting for him to appear.
Yep? What is it? What you want?
You sell sandwiches and pop here, don't you?
Yep, we do. In the daytime. But it closed up for the night.
I know, but I was wondering if you could possibly may have a cup of coffee. Black coffee.
Not at this time of night, mister. My wife's a cooking, she's in bed.
Well, now, listen, just a minute ago, there was a man standing here, right beside here, and he was a suspicious-looking man.
Henry? Who is it, Henry?
It's nobody, mother. She's a fella thinks he wants a cup of coffee. Now, go back into bed.
I don't mean to disturb you, but you see, I was driving along when I just happened to look, and there he was.
What was he doing?
Nothing.
You've been hitting a bottle. That's what's the matter with you. You got nothing better than to do than wake decent folk out of their hard-earned sleep. Now get going. Go on.
But he looked as though he was going to rob you.
I ain't got nothing in this stand to lose. Now on your way before I call out sheriff folks.
I got into the car again and drove on slowly. I was beginning to hate the car. If I could have found a place to stop to rest a little, but I was in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri now. Few resort places there were closed. I had seen him at that roadside stand. I knew I'd see him again. Maybe at the next turn of the road. I knew that when I saw him next, I'd run him down. But I didn't see him again until late the next afternoon. I'd stopped the car at a sleepy little junction just across the border into Oklahoma, let a train pass by when he appeared across the tracks. He was leaning against a telephone pole. It was a perfectly airless, dry day. The red clay of Oklahoma was baking under the southwestern sun. Yet there were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. I couldn't stand that. Without thinking, blindly, I started the car across the tracks. He didn't even look up at me. He was staring at the ground. I stepped on the gas hard, veering the wheel sharply toward him. I could hear the train in the distance now, but I didn't care. Then, something went wrong with the car. It stalled right on the tracks. The train was coming closer. I could hear its bell. Heard its cry, its whistle crying. Still, he stood there. Now I knew that he was beckoning. Beckoning me to my death.
All right. We'll take a break here on The Hitchhiker, starring Orson Welles, in the Mercury Summer Theater from 1946. We'll be back after these words. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Roger. And we play classic radio shows for you every single Saturday and Sunday night for 3 hours each night. And we play three classic radio shows each night. So my math says that's six classic radio shows over 6 hours on the weekend. I was never really that great at math, but Lisa seems to be nodding.
No, I wasn't doing anything. You were looking at me for verification, so I was purposely not responding.
Yeah, but she was smiling, and her dimples were very, very prevalent, you know? And I told you, there's spackle for that.
Okay, well, Roger said he was going to bring some for me, right. So I'm waiting.
There is spackle for that, Lisa. All right, we're tuning into a great supernatural kind of thriller on the Mercury Summer Theater with Orson Welles. Let's get right back to it. Here's the conclusion now to The Hitchhiker on the Mercury Summer Theater.
Well, I frustrated him that time. The starter had worked at last. I managed to back up, but after the train had passed, he was gone. I was all alone in the hot, dry afternoon. After that, I knew I had to do something. I didn't know who this man was or what he wanted of me. I only knew that from now on, I mustn't let myself be alone on the road for 1 minute.
Hello there. Hello. Like a ride?
What do you think? How far are you going?
Amarillo. I'll text you to Amarillo.
Amarillo, Texas?
Yeah, I'll drive you there.
Gee.
Hop in. It's...
Mind if I take off my shoes? My dog's killing
me. No, go right ahead.
Oh, gee, what a break this is. Swell car and decent guy driving all the way to Amarillo.
All I've been getting so far is trucks.
You hitchhike much?
Sure. Only it's tough sometimes in these great open spaces to get the break.
Yeah, I think it would be, but I'll bet, though, if you got a good pickup and a fast car, you could get to places faster than, well, say, another person in another car.
I don't get you.
Well, you take me, for instance. Suppose I'm driving across the country at a nice, steady clip of about 45 miles an hour. Couldn't a girl like you just standing beside the road, waiting for lifts, beat me to town after town, provided she got picked up every time in a car that was doing 65 or 70 miles an hour?
I don't know. Maybe she could, maybe she couldn't. What difference does it make?
Oh, no difference. It's just a crazy idea I had sitting here in the car.
Oh, imagine spending your time in a swell car thinking of things like that.
What would you do instead?
What would I do if I was a good-looking fellow like yourself? Well, I'd just enjoy myself. Every minute of the time, I'd sit back and relax. If I saw a good-looking girl along the side of the road... Hey!
Did you see him, too?
See who?
That man standing beside the barbed wire fence.
I didn't see anybody.
Right there.
There was nothing, just a barbed wire fence. What did you think he was doing, trying to run into that barbed wire fence?
There was a man there, I tell you. A thin, gray man with an overnight bag in his hand. I was trying to run him down.
Run him down? You mean kill him?
I'm trying to get rid of him. Or at least prove that he's real. But you say you didn't see him back there. You sure?
I didn't see a soul. As far as that's
concerned... Well, watch for him. Watch for him the next time. Then keep watching. Keep your eyes peeled on the road. He'll turn up again. Maybe any minute now. There! Look there!
Hey, how does this door work? I'm getting out of here.
Did you see him that time? Did you see him?
No, I didn't see him that time. And personally, mister, I don't expect never to see him. All I want to do is go on living. And I don't see how I will very long driving with you.
I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me. Please, don't go.
So if you'll excuse
me,
mister.
Please, you can't go. Listen, how'd you like to go to California? I'll drive you all the way to California.
Pink elephants all the way? No, thanks.
Listen, please, just 1 minute.
You know what I think you need, big boy? Not a girlfriend, just a good dose of sleep. There, I cut it now.
No. No, you can't go.
Leave your hands off of me, do you hear? Leave your hands.
Come back here, please. Come back. She ran from me as if I was some kind of monster. A few minutes later, I saw a passing truck pick her up. I knew then that I was utterly alone. I was in the heart of the great Texas prairies. There wasn't a car on the road after the truck went by. I tried to figure out what to do, how to get hold of myself. I could find a place to rest, or even if I could sleep right here in the car. Just a few hours and sleep. Just along the side of the road.
I was getting my winter overcoat out of the back seat to use as a blanket. Just as a blanket. When I saw him coming toward me. Coming toward me. Emerging from the herd of moving steer. I didn't wait for him to come any closer. Maybe I should have spoken to him then. Fought it out then and there, for now he began to be everywhere. Whenever I stopped, even for a minute, for gas, for oil, for a drink, a pop, a cup of coffee, a sandwich, he was there. I saw him standing outside the auto camp in Amarillo that night when I dared to slow down. He was standing near the drinking fountain, a little camping spot just inside the border of New Mexico. He was waiting for me outside the Navajo reservation where I stopped to check my tires. I saw him in Albuquerque where I bought 10 gallons of gas. I was afraid now. Afraid to stop. I began to drive faster and faster. I was in lunar landscape now. The great arid mesa country of New Mexico. I drove through it with the indifference of a fly crawling over the face of the moon. And now he didn't even wait for me to stop. Unless I drove at 85 miles an hour over those endless roads. He waited for me at every other mile. I'd see his figure. Shadowless. Flitting before me, still in its same attitude, over the cold and lifeless ground, flitting over dried up rivers, over broken stones cast up by old glacial upheavals, flitting in the pure and cloudless air. Myself when I finally reached Gallup, New Mexico, this morning. There's an auto camp here. It's cold. Almost deserted this time of year. I went inside and asked if there was a telephone. I had the feeling that if I could speak to somebody familiar, somebody that I loved, I could pull myself together.
Number, please.
Long distance.
Thank you. This is long distance.
I'd like to put in a call to my home to Brooklyn, New York. I'm Ronald Adams. The number is Beechwood 9970.
Thank you. Thank you. What is your number?
My number? It's 312.
Albuquerque. New York for Gallup. New York. Gallup, New Mexico, calling Beechwood 9970.
I'd read somewhere that love could banish demons. It was in the middle of the morning. I knew Mother'd be home. I pictured her tall, white-haired in her crisp house dress going about her tasks. It would be enough, I thought, just to hear the even calmness of her voice.
Will you please deposit $3.85 for the first 3 minutes? When you have deposited a dollar and a half, will you wait until I have collected the money? All right. Deposit another dollar and a half. Will you please deposit the remaining 85 cents? Ready with Brooklyn. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Mrs. Adams' residence.
Hello. Hello, Mother?
This is Mrs. Adams' residence. Who is it you wish to speak to, please?
Who is this?
This is Mrs. Whitney.
Mrs. Whitney? I don't know any Mrs. Whitney. Is this Beechwood 9970?
Yes.
Where's my mother? Where's Mrs. Adams?
Mrs. Adams is not at home. She's still in the hospital.
The hospital?
Yes. Who is this calling, please? Is it a member of the family?
What's she in the hospital for?
She's been prostrated for 5 days. A nervous breakdown.
Nervous.
Who is this calling?
Nervous breakdown. My mother was never...
It's all taken place since the death of her oldest son, Ronald.
Since the death of her oldest son, Ronald? Hey, what is this? What number is this?
This is Beechwood 9970. It's all been very sudden. He was killed just 6 days ago in an automobile accident on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Sir, your 3 minutes are up. Your 3 minutes are up, sir.
And so, I'm sitting here in this deserted auto camp in Gallup, New Mexico. And so I'm trying to think. I'm trying to get a hold of myself. Otherwise, I'll go crazy. Outside, it is night. The vast, soulless night of New Mexico. 1 million stars are in the sky. Ahead of me stretch 1,000 miles of empty mesa. Mountains, prairies, desert. Somewhere among them, he is waiting for me. Somewhere I shall know who he is and who I am.
Now, here is Orson Welles.
Well, next week, ladies and gentlemen, we bring to your radio another Mercury favorite. We hope a favorite of yours. You've asked for it many times. We've performed it many times. Jane Eyre. And Jane will be played by a Mercury actress who was heard tonight and has been heard so often on our shows. One of the most gifted people we know in our business, Miss Alice Frost. Jane Eyre, then, with Alice Frost and your obedient servant. That's the same time next week, same station. Please join us. Until then, speaking for my sponsors, the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, for all of us on the Mercury Theater, including Bernard Herrmann, who wrote and conducted the music on this program, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
This program came to you through the courtesy of the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, makers of blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is the Mercury Summer Theater starring Orson Welles in The Hitchhiker, written by Lucille Fletcher. And also in the cast, Alice Frost. You heard Ken Roberts doing the announcing for this program, as heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed Orson Welles in the Mercury Summer Theater. Now, we have two more Orson Welles radio shows taking us up till 2 a.m. But first, a word from our sponsors. All righty. It is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. It's about 7 minutes after midnight. Happy Monday morning to you, Lisa.
Thanks,
and to
Carl.
Mike, and to Dan, and to all of our listeners. And, you know, I don't think we thank our listeners enough. This is all about the listeners. We want to make them happy. We want to play the shows they want to hear. The best way to let us know what you want to hear is how, Mike?
Generally on Facebook, WGN Radio Theater. But Lisa likes this whole texting thing going on, so I'm going to say that you can text us at 312-981-7200.
Yeah, it's a new toy that Lisa is really like happy and chipper and jovial about.
Yeah, I've got a nice screen in front of me, and I'm sharing everybody's comments and ideas with everyone, and I like to do that. We want to hear what you have to say.
Another way to talk to Lisa.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't enough.
Right, right.
So you can text us at 312-981-7200. We do read all of the texts. I mean, we don't read them on the air, but we do read them.
Yeah, now and then we'll mention somebody.
Okay. And in this hour, we're going to tune into a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense, starring Orson Welles in The Marvelous Barastro. And then in our third hour this morning, we'll tune into The Fred Allen Show. And Orson Welles is the guest on The Fred Allen Show from 1946. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Miles Ahead is an upcoming biographical film directed by and starring this actor as jazz musician Miles Davis.
Musician
Miles Davis.
There you go.
And if you can name this actor, you will win a pair of tickets to the revival of Thornton Wilder's
Uh oh, she's got the giggles now.
You're going to see Our Town playing at the Leela Arts Center in downtown Des Plaines.
All right, very good. The number to call, 312-981-7200, which is the same text line. Right?
Right. You can text us. You can call us. It's all good.
Okay. And here's a hint. This actor was the lead in 2004's Hotel Rwanda.
I am glad that you have shot this footage and that the world will see it. It is the only way we have a chance that people might intervene.
This guy's a great actor. He was in Crash, too, and he was also in Boogie Nights.
He's great.
Terrific actor. Call us if you know who that is. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I am glad that you have shot this footage and that the world will see it. It is the only way we have a chance that people might intervene.
Hey, Francine.
Yes.
How are you?
Just fine. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Can you name that actor for us?
Yes, the name of the actor is Don Cheadle.
You are right, Francine. We are so happy to give you a pair of tickets to the revival of Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Our Town. It's playing April 8th through May 1st at the Leela Arts Center in downtown Des Plaines. And you can check them out at leelaartscenter.com. Francine, thank you so much for calling in, and we appreciate that you're listening to our show.
Well, thank you. I love the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Francine. I appreciate that. And you know what else I appreciate?
Me.
I do. I do appreciate you. But I appreciate Me's Meals because our sponsor, Me's Meals, is giving everybody listening, and I mean everybody out there listening, dinner for two delivered to their home absolutely free, no strings attached, no gimmicks, no nothing. All you have to do is go to their website, which is M-E-E-Z Meals, meesmeals.com. And order dinner for two, and it's delivered right to your home free of charge. And what did you order this week, Lisa?
I ordered the Mediterranean calzone, and I ordered the rotini di Modena with chicken and spinach.
That sounds Italian.
You know what? The food is so good, and I really feel good about myself because I feel like I'm making dinner. You know, even though the ingredients come all prepped and ready, I'm still putting it together and putting in the oven and following the instructions on the little card.
That's what I love about it because it's all ready to go. I still cook it.
Right.
But it's just so easy.
It's fun, and the kids help me, and we make dinner, and I don't have to think, okay, what's on tap for dinner tonight?
What did you order this week, Mike?
I'm getting the Mexican steak taco bowl and broccoli cheddar chicken bake.
I ordered the Southwestern salmon and fresh corn salsa. So, I mean, there's all kinds of great stuff. Folks, you really should go and take advantage of this. It's a limited time offer. Meez, which is spelled M-E-E-Z, meals.com. Go to their website, order dinner for two, and get it shipped to your home absolutely free, but you do have to put in the code
radio.
Radio. You have to put that code in there, yep. And then there's no cost. It's absolutely free. Just do that and take advantage of it. And I think, and this is for everyone listening. All of our listeners get a dinner for two, plus delivered to your home,
and it won't last too long. So if you're interested, do it now.
Yeah, do check it out. All right, it's time for Suspense. Orson Welles appeared on Suspense quite a bit because he liked this venue because it was up his alley. It was all mystery shows, and Orson Welles liked that kind of stuff. And in 1944, he starred in an episode called "The Marvelous Barastro." It was a classic of literature written by Ben Hecht. And the you'll hear Joseph Kearns as the man in black on this. This is sponsored by Roma Wines originally. Let's go back to April 13th, 1944 for The Marvelous Barastro, starring Orson Welles on Suspense.
Roma Wines present Suspense. This is the man in black here to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you Mr. Orson Welles. Mr. Welles will appear as star of a suspense play called The Marvelous Barastro, from an extraordinary story by the distinguished American author Ben Hecht. And now with The Marvelous Barastro, produced and directed by William Speer, and with the performance of Orson Welles, we again hope to keep you in Suspense.
This is William Speer. 3 weeks ago, I was seated in my office poring over possible future stories with which to hold you in suspense when a stranger appeared, unannounced.
I am the Marvelous Barastro. I've come to tell you a story.
How did you get in here?
Oh, I am a magician by trade. I do such things. Perhaps you've heard of me, Barastro.
No.
I am the greatest magician alive. No, that is not so. I am the second greatest. But soon I will be first. I am leaving tonight for Mexico City. You see me now for the first and last time. You will never see me again. No one will ever see me again. It is the last of Barastro.
How's that?
I'm going to Mexico City to murder a man.
Well...
His name is Rico Sansoni.
Why are you going to kill him?
Because he is the most evil man in the world. I've been waiting 20 years for his name to appear. For as long as he chose to hide, there was no hope. He's too clever, far too clever. Even for me. But I knew that his vanity would betray him and that someday I would read again the name Rico Sansoni. I knew he would return to the stage.
Is he a magician?
The greatest who ever lived, the most profound, the most subtle, and the most evil. He's greater than I. He begins his first performance in 20 years in Mexico next week. I will be there to see it.
Well, I would like to hear your story.
I can tell you all but the end. That I will be unable to provide now. But you will find it out for yourself.
Well, I'd like to hear what you can tell me.
I will tell you, Mr. Speer, but on one condition.
And that?
I must have your oath not to interfere.
Well, really now, you can understand I can scarcely give you that. After all, I...
Very well. I will take my chances with you. The story begins 20 years ago. I was a young man. I traveled as a magician with a small carnival through southeastern Europe. One night we came to a village in Malo, Russia. Our cymbals sounded, our torches flickered in the spring wind, and the villagers gathered around our tents and wagons. I had taken my place in the black box outside my tent. There were holes in the box through which I could watch the crowd while the barker made his announcement.
Barastro, the marvel of marvels! Barastro, the magician, who speaks with the dead and reads the secrets of life!
At this moment, I saw her for the first time. Her young and gentle face surprised me among so many peasants. I said to myself, what a strange girl, what a beautiful child. I kept watching her. I couldn't keep my eyes away from her. At length, an old peasant led her in, holding her by the hand. I saw at once that she was blind.
My granddaughter would like you to tell her future.
Can you tell my future?
Yes.
Will it be a happy one, my future?
Hold out your hand, and I will tell you.
Here.
A dark mist passed over me. I felt a sudden chill as I touched her hand. I listen to the voices which foretell the future. Sorrow, sorrow, they breathe. Pain and sorrow. Fly, run. I study the girl's face, a fear gripping at my heart. Her large, sightless eyes were calm, resigned. I could not bring myself to tell her what I saw. The spirits promise you happiness. I lied. Your hands will touch beautiful things. Love and delight will await you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
That was the beginning. Her face haunted me that night. I could not sleep. I made inquiries the next morning and I found her. We walked through the hills. She did not need my hand to guide her. She knew every stone, every turn of the path. She spoke of the trees around her. She had strange names for them.
I call that tree Lullaby because it sings when it sways in the wind.
Lullaby?
And that one, see? With its branches open towards heaven. I call that one Prayer.
How do you know its branches open toward the sky?
When I was younger, I climbed it.
Anna.
Come, I'll race you to the bed of flowers at the turn.
Anna.
Hurry, I run far.
We walked often through the hills. I knew that she was aware of her destiny. The stars had told me she would not live long, and that agony and terror waited for her on the short journey. Our caravan remained for 2 weeks in the village. At the end of that time, I asked Anna to come with me as my wife.
You make me very happy, Shari. I could live only with you.
I will love you with all my heart.
And you will teach me, Shari. You will teach me to see.
To see?
Does one need eyes to see as you do? Shari, you will teach me to see beyond the horizon. You will teach me to see as you see.
We were married. We rode together in the gilded wagon, and the vows were taken under a clear sky. Suddenly, the sky changed. It was only then that I realized what I had done. In seeking to save her, I was fulfilling the terrible message of the stars. For it was I, Shari Barastro, who was the instrument fate had selected for her ruin. Then it came. One night, as I stood in the black box outside my tent, I knew that I needed no further word from the mists of prophecy. It was there. It had come. He stood among the peasants before our tent, a graceful figure, smiling, leaning on his cane, a man of the world, amusingly out of place in this faraway little village. I looked at him through the holes in my box as I looked. I turned cold. I watched him, and I felt afraid. He was studying Anna. Never once did he stop looking at her. My temper is quick and fiery. I went up to him as he was watching Anna. Ah, subtly was how graceful. I seized his arm and demanded to know what he meant by staring at my wife. He removed my hand as if I were a child. I can tell you there was something terrifying in his strength. I must humbly beg your pardon for this misunderstanding. Let me introduce myself. My name is Rico Sansoni. I'm a student of the occult, traveling about the world in search of knowledge. Inside of me, I feel that girl has remarkable psychic powers. I'd hope to be able to induce her to join me as my assistant. Soon planning to go on the stage, but now that I know she's your wife, I apologize again for my seeming forwardness. Oh, I suppose there's nothing to do but to accept that apology. And you, madame? Anna. I think it is fair, Anna. Anna?
No. I have nothing to say.
It was thus Rico Sansoni entered our lives. Little by little, during the days that followed, he attached himself to us. We listened, Anna and I, to his tales. He'd been everywhere, seen everything. He brought the world into our gilded wagon. In his presence, I always felt elated and flattered. Thus does a man move in the grip of his destiny. Thus do we dig with our own hands the appointed grave for our happiness. For one night, Anna came to me and took my hands and told me something that made my heart grow black.
Shari, Rico Sansoni has made love to
Anna.
Me. I've done nothing wrong. I'm afraid of Rico. I tell you this so you will understand my fear.
Do you want to tell me about it now?
Yes.
Tell me then.
Rico came to me this afternoon while I was alone. He took my hand and held it gently in his. I suspected nothing until he asked me if I loved you and how deeply I loved you. Then he asked me if I love you more than happiness or life. I took my hand from him and said, I cannot talk of love to you, even of my love for my husband. Please go.
Yes? Rico.
Oh, she's told you. Sally, forgive me. For a moment I grew weak. Let me remain your friend. I brought you both some flowers. I picked them myself. Will you accept them? You won't accept them?
Of course we will, my friend. How could I have doubted you? I understand. Come, forget the entire incident.
You are kind. Really, you're kind.
This was the third month of our friendship, and now I began to feel it was my companionship he desired, not Anna's. We spent long hours together without Anna. Under his care, my mind was expanding, my powers developing. He seemed interested in my every move. And again, I was flattered, lured, disarmed.
You have a funny way of saying the word beautiful, my friend. How is it you say it?
Beautiful.
That's it.
Beautiful.
Is that right?
You're telling me about the Houdini method of respiration.
Oh, yes, so I was.
Beautiful.
Huh? Very good, I think. I like you, Sonny. I like you very much.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing how one can be drawn in by flattery and charm.
Then one day I was sitting in my tent. When a curious sense came over me, I felt a pressure on my heart as if a hand were closing around it. It was a warning. I left quickly. I hurried to the apartment. Anna had remained there. She frequently did in the afternoon. I found myself running toward the door. I paused, waited until I'd recovered my breath, and then forcing a smile to my lips, opened the door. Oh. I saw Rico. Rico. Standing with his arms around her. Rico. Her face raised to his lips. Speechless, powerless, I looked at him. I heard her voice murmuring words of love. Her arms moved around his neck and she kissed him. Then I heard his voice. Anna. Anna, my darling.
Shari, my love.
Anna, my darling. My beautiful darling. The sound of his voice, a horror seized me. Now I knew why he had spent so many hours with me, why he was so interested. It was my voice. It was Barastro talking. It was a voice that seemed to come from my own throat, a horrible, familiar voice, and I understood what had happened. I sprang forward, shouting his name, Rico! He turned and faced me, pointed his finger at me as if he were an image in a mirror. Rico! He echoed.
All righty, let's break into this episode of Suspense, the Marvelous Barastro, and Orson Welles playing two roles with two different Italian dialects there. Pretty interesting. We'll get back to Suspense in a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. But first, a word from our sponsors. All right, welcome back. The WGN Radio Theater is on the air. Lisa Wolf to my right, What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. Still here. I haven't left you yet.
All right. Before we get back to suspense, I want to say hello to two of my good friends. Joe Kafka, he's the owner of Middleton's on Main, and also Mason Hill, the bartender there. What's up, guys?
Hey, not Carl. Much.
Good
How
to
doing,
have you.
Lisa?
Good to have you on the show.
Nice to be here.
And we wanted to have you here for a couple of reasons. You have some really great events coming up, and we'll tell you a little bit more about Middleton's. And also, we're going to tease our audience about a ping pong tournament that we're going to launch at Middleton's. Middleton's is in Wakanda. Tell us first about, and our audience, about Middleton's and why it's so special.
Well, Middleton's is a Irish-inspired destination gastropub.
Nice. And you know what? We were eating some of the food earlier.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, can you tell us about some of your specialties and some of the food that you brought for all of us to sample here? Because we've been enjoying this food for the last hour.
Fantastic.
Well, we'll have Mason start with what those excellent cocktails were.
Yeah. I'm having one right now, by the way.
We offer a terrific selection of craft cocktails, a wonderful selection of craft beers. We brought with you tonight a couple special ones. An Irish mule, that's going to be a spin on the very popular traditional Moscow mule, made with Powers Irish whiskey. We do a little bitters. We won't tell you the whole recipe. Ginger beer, super refreshing, great cocktail for the summer. Fresh lime juice in there. Also a gin Ricky. I believe someone was drinking a gin Ricky here earlier.
Maybe Mike.
Yeah, that's gin, a little simple syrup. Again, fresh squeezed lime. These are going to be great for that summertime cocktail, that refreshing cocktail on those hot days.
Well, we had a bowl that had, it was a bread bowl with lamb in there, like the most tender lamb, and it was unbelievable. And then we had some pounded chicken. What was that?
Yeah, so that's the Jameson chicken that we have. That's a, like you said, it's a pounded flat chicken breast, lightly breaded. It's served over a garlic mashed potatoes with some wilted spinach and Jameson reduction cream sauce over the top, which really pulls the whole thing together nicely.
That sauce is what makes that dish, ties it all together.
It's so good.
Joe, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to open this restaurant?
That's a long story, but to make it short, I was a vice president in marketing for a national bank for about 10 years, found out I was going to get laid off. I was lucky enough to have a long notice on that layoff and decided that I didn't want to be looking over my shoulder anymore and wanted to serve people. And I love people. I love the restaurant business, bar business, having people come in and being able to speak with them face to face and make them happy. So that's really what we're all about.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he sure does.
It's a great Thanks, place. I was just there last week. It was amazing. And we are going to, first of all, there's a couple of events coming up. Tell us about the events.
Well, we got a couple of things. So on April 16th, we've got Keith Semple, who was on The Voice.
Phenomenal talent.
Yep, he's fantastic. He's going to be coming out doing an unplugged show. That's a free show at our place. And then on May 4th,
we have a beer dinner. We do beer dinners every couple months. That's where we get some fantastic food. We get a local brewery. It's going to be with two brothers this time. A representative from the brewery is going to come in. They're going to talk about beer. Our chef is going to talk about the food. We're going to pair five delicious courses with beer pairings. We're going to eat, drink, be merry, talk about beer and food.
Very cool.
And at the same time, this is a family-friendly restaurant,
yes.
And we know that you have families. And tell us a little bit about what you do on Sundays for our little ones.
Yeah, we have 99-cent kids' meals every Sunday night from 5 to 7 o'clock. If your viewers, your listeners come in anytime on Sunday evening, mention that they heard us on WGN, 99-cent kids' meals.
You cannot beat that. And
we also have entertainment
awesome.
As well.
So Sundays, just mentioned WGN, 99-cent kid meals. And the location is 110 South Main Street in Wakanda, 110 South Main Street, Wakanda. And here's the website. It's middletonsonmain.com. Now, June 26th, I just want to alert our listeners. June 26th, we're going to launch. Every month, we're going to have a ping pong tournament with our listeners. So I'm going to be playing our listeners for prizes, also some celebrity contestants. So, you know, I'm a big ping pong lunatic, right, Lisa?
You're just a lunatic.
Yeah,
but, okay.
But definitely a ping pong lunatic. And we're going to be soliciting our audience to play me in ping pong. And our first event will be June 26th. So mark that down, June 26th, at Middleton's on Main, which is 110 South Main Street in Wakanda. So Joe and Mason, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it. Thanks for bringing all this amazing food.
And you guys can see the food if you go to our Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater Facebook page. You can check out the food and some fun on our page.
Great having you on the show, guys.
Well, we're really proud of what we do, and we appreciate you having us.
It's our pleasure. Our pleasure. We'll see you soon, and we'll be there on June 26th to play ping pong against some of our listeners.
With your eye patch.
And I think, and Joe has been saying he's a ping pong player, so he's. I'm going to have to play Joe, too, while we're there.
At Middleton's.
We'll see what happens. All right, buddy. Let's get back now to this episode of Orson Welles, starring in the marvelous Barastro on Suspense.
Murder was in my heart. I flew at this monster. We struggled across the room. He answered my cries with cries that echoed each note, each inflection of my voice. I saw him through my rage. His face was contorted like my own. His every feature had changed. He was Barastro. There were two Barastros screaming together, tumbling over each other. Held me in his hands that were like steel. I could not move or cry out. His hand was on my throat. I lay gasping, crazed, and it was Barastro who was holding me. Then this horrible and familiar figure changed. It became Rico. It was Rico Sansoni who spoke. The breath was leaving my body. I was strangling, dying, yet I could hear him. Barastro, God, you're killing me. Shari, Shari, mercy! I'm dying! His voice was faint. I felt in this moment the agonies of 100 deaths. For as my eyes grew dark, I saw with horror the thing he had in his mind. He was pretending it was I who was killing him. And thus he would kill me and go to her as Barastro. It would be Rico Sansoni who would be buried. It would be Barastro who remained. For a moment, I caught a glimpse of his cold, ruthless eyes burning now over my face as he enacted his false death, groaning, pleading for mercy. And a strength drawn from the soul filled my lungs. I cried out with all my might, Anna! Anna! Knowing that by this, she would understand it was I who was dying. And darkness seized me. An hour had passed when I opened my eyes. My head was splitting. My throat was stiffened. I raised myself and looked. He was gone. I saw her. She was standing in the corner of the room, crouched against the wall, her hand against her teeth, and staring into the terrible dark around her. Anna! I whispered to her. Anna! It is I, Anna. I, Shari. Anna! Oh, God. Anna, please. Anna, darling, listen to me. Anna, give me your hand. Anna, listen. It is I. Anna, Shari, your husband. Anna, listen, Anna. Remember when we first kissed? Anna. That time on the hill, Anna, remember? I called you little princess, remember, Anna, and Anna, about your trees, Anna, huh? About lullaby, the names you had for them, lullaby and prayer. Anna, one with its branches pointing toward heaven, the one we climbed, Anna, please, Anna. It is I, Anna, come here, listen carefully, Anna. The spirits promise you happiness. Your hands will touch beautiful things. Love and delight await you.
Oh, Shari.
Oh, my darling. My Anna, my sweet.
Oh, Shari, hold me close.
Yes, my darling. Oh, he's Shari, hurt you. He's done. There, my darling. It's all right now. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right.
Rico had disappeared. We laid our plans, Anna and I. As soon as she was able to walk, we abandoned the carnival. We were inseparable then. She could not bear to have me away for a moment. I understood everything, everything in her soul. Yes, even the trembling that would seize her sometimes when I took her in my hand. It was I alone he could not deceive. I alone. To anyone else, he could become Barastro. Even to her, whose senses had learned every breath, every inflection of the man she loved. Even to her, he had been Barastro. The months passed. Our life had become again almost like a honeymoon. Almost, I say, for there were nights when I would awake to find her fingers tracing the contours of my face. Then it was I pretended to be ill and remained at her side. We said nothing, but we knew the shadow in each other's mind. Everything went smoothly, though, until one evening, when I entered the cabaret where I was performing. I felt unusually disturbed. It was winter. I was removing my coat when it came again, as I had known it would. The warning, the hand closing over my heart. I ran from the place and raced home. I entered our cottage by the back door quietly like a thief, and I stood listening. From inside, I could hear her voice.
Oh, Shari, please. Darling, you're ill again. I'll take care of you, darling. I'll make you feel better.
Anna, my dear Anna. How I love you. He was back. One doesn't reason. One does not reason in the midst of a nightmare. Yet terror can wake the mind to a clairvoyance, an understanding beyond thought. I stood motionless, silent, listening. The light was turned out. I heard her laugh. Laugh like a child in the dark. And this sound killed me. Yes, one is dead forever. When happiness is torn from the heart, I wanted to rush into the room. I wanted to shout, Anna, Anna, don't touch him. He's Rico. But instead, I slipped quickly from the house. I walked in the cold streets. My thoughts returned. I had acted out of one clear impulse. Through the terror and agony of those moments when I heard him take her in his arms, there had remained the certainty above everything else. I must save her. And I knew I had acted wisely. Had I rushed into the room, had I made a noise, she would have died. She would have known in that moment, as I knew listening to him, that he had been there before. That he had been before. That he had crept through our defenses as a shadow creeps. And we had not known. I thought of them together as I walked. And then I thought again that I had only to rush back to speak her name. Yes, and destroy her. Destroy her. I kept on walking. And as I walked, I began to understand him. Yes, I was dealing with a monster. He would manage to leave her, as he must have done so often before, a few moments before I was due to return from the cabaret. And if I sensed something was wrong, he would rely on my love for her to keep the sense a secret. He knew me well. He understood I would allow my heart to be eaten away with grief. And I would not make a sign lest I destroy her whom I love more than myself. It was I who must be careful, not he. Yes, he knew me. He gambled on me. I determined to kill him the first moment I saw him. And I began to think. To think of his superhuman strength. That he might kill me. Even as he had first intended. And that he would go on living with her as Barastro. She would never know I was dead. She would continue to love me in his arms. To press her kisses upon my murderer! And this was the thought that contained in it. The fullest measure of horror. The thought of that moment when she would see him. And not me. You understand the grief? The grief of that night? Yes, it is fortunate. I cannot remember it all. I returned home.
At the time, Rico wanted me to. I wasn't careful about my coming. I trusted him. Do you understand? I trusted him that out of his evil, he would spare her, as I spared her out of love. I entered the bedroom, opened the door, and walked in. She was alone. Anna, dear. Anna, it's I. It's I. It's not Rico. It's I. It's I. Anna! Anna! This is my memory of Anna. My memory. She seized her face with her hands as if she were tearing something. Yes, the darkness. As I rushed to her, she fell. She did not speak again. In the morning, she died.
That is the story, as nearly in Barostro's words as I can remember them. When he'd finished, he got up quietly, looked at me a moment, and said, "Thank you for listening to me, Mr. Spear. You understand now my prediction that there will be one less magician alive in the world within a fortnight." Then he turned and left my office. I must admit that the whole thing shook me rather badly. I've been spent the whole week wondering if something might happen, something I couldn't predict. This morning, I think perhaps it came. At least, while I was reading through the theatrical weekly variety, and my eye caught a notice, you probably saw it too, of a magician who had been killed in Mexico City. The account said that two magicians had been together in an automobile accident. While driving through the rail yard district, their car stalled on a track and had been demolished by an oncoming train. One of the magicians, unidentifiable, had been cut to pieces. The other, miraculously, escaped with his life, although his features were so horribly disfigured that plastic surgery will have to create a new face for him. The survivor identified himself as the marvelous Barostro.
And so closes Ben Hecht's story of the marvelous Barostro, starring Orson Welles. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is Orson Welles. It was a great pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, as it always is, to appear as a purveyor of suspense. Orson Welles played the part of both magicians on the program tonight. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Ed Gardner, radio's famous Archie, in Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And that is Suspense, going back to April 13th, 1944, with the marvelous Barostro. And Orson Welles played two roles in that, sponsored by Roma Wines, heard on CBS. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, this is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater, and yep, Lisa's awake. Wow, it's two nights in a row. You made it up to way past your bedtime.
Wow, there's a lot of Facebook posts and texts to be read, so yeah. I can think of nobody better for the job.
Well, you know what? I prefer you this way rather than horizontal there in the corner snoring.
Oh,
yeah,
like usual.
Not as attractive.
Right.
Way more attractive on the air here,
I'll
Lisa.
I'll try to stay up.
Lovely Lisa. Lovely Lisa, meter maid. Right? Remember that song?
No, I don't.
I mean, neither.
Did you make that up?
I just made it up, yeah.
Okay.
So what's going on in this hour, this wacky hour, the third hour? We get a little wacky in the third hour.
We're
sleep deprived, that's why.
No, I think we're kind of more awake.
Not me.
No?
No.
Okay, well, I'm
tired.
Not deprived.
So in this hour, Fred Allen, right? We're going to tune into the Fred Allen Show with special guest Orson Welles. And he didn't do a lot of comedy shows. Orson Welles mostly was sort of a dramatic guy. But every once in a while, he appeared on Burns and Allen or Jack Benny. And in this particular instance, he is appearing on the Fred Allen Show. So that's coming your way. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This founding member of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time has joined the cast of Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Men Tell No Tales, the fifth installment in the Pirates of the Caribbean film series.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. What will you win?
A pair of tickets to see Our Town playing at the Lila Art Center in downtown Des Plaines.
All right, you'll hear this singer singing here.
Well, she was just...
All right, call us if you know who that singer is, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And we're back with No Lip, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that song again.
Well, she was just 17, you know what I mean, and the way she looked is way beyond the bed.
Hey, Lori from Bartlett.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Oh, good.
Who sings that song?
That's jamming to little Paul McCartney.
You are right, and you are a winner. You have won a pair of tickets to Thornton Wilder's play, which is Our Town. It's playing right now, April 8th through May 1st at the Lila Art Center in downtown Des Plaines. You can check them out at lilaartcenter.com. Thank you so much, Lori, for calling in. You are a winner.
Oh thanks. It's going to be fun.
Great.
Thanks very much. All right. Twin Anchors Restaurant and Tavern was established in 1932. When you've been around 80-plus years, you must be doing something right. Try their Chicago-style ribs that are so tender they fall off the bone. Slow-roasted chicken, giant grilled shrimp, or tender prime steaks. At Twin Anchors, you can dine in, carry out, or enjoy their outdoor cafe. Favorite place for Hollywood's biggest celebrities, including Bonnie Hunt, Conan O'Brien, Chris Farley, and William Peterson, to name a few. When Frank Sinatra wasn't sitting in booth 7, they'd ship him his favorite ribs and coleslaw. Twin Anchors is conveniently located in Chicago's Old Town neighborhood at 1655 Cedric Street. See their menu at Twin Anchors, that's Twin, A-N-C-H-O-R-S, ribs.com. Twin Anchors, ribs.com. All right, Lisa Wolf, it's time for our third radio show for this edition, edition 66. This is program 66 of the WGN Radio Theater.
And still going strong.
All right. So Orson Welles is who we are spotlighting, and he appeared in 1946 as a guest on the Fred Allen Show. In this program from March 3rd of 1946, the Allen's Alley question is, have you heard about the chicken surplus, and are you eating more chicken because of it? Now, Fred Allen, Lisa, was born in 1894, and he began his career in vaudeville, becoming one of radio's most acerbic and admired comedians. His wife was Portland Hoffa. She appeared on the show with him. They performed together on radio from 1932 all the way to 1949. And in 1937, they began a feud, or Fred Allen began a feud, with Jack Benny. And it was verbal sparring, which continued for many, many years. Very interesting, but they were like really close friends in real life. The best-remembered sketch on the Fred Allen Show was the Allen's Alley, where issues of the day with eccentric characters were discussed, including Senator Claghorn, Mrs. Nussbaum, and Titus Moody. And Fred Allen, listen to this, Lisa, Fred Allen stayed sharp by reading up to 9 newspapers each day and writing and rewriting his radio scripts. And in the 1950s, he was a panelist on CBS's very popular quiz show, What's My Line? And I watch those on MeTV, and you can watch them on television. You see Fred Allen is
there. Yeah, I've seen them, too.
And also Dorothy Kilgallen is on there, of course. He died in 1956. So We lost him a long time ago, but we're going to tune in to a Fred Allen show now. Orson Welles is the guest. Let's go back to March 3rd, 1946, for the first portion of the Fred Allen Show.
I can't think of anything tonight, kiddies.
The makers of Bluebonnet Margarine and Tenderleaf Tea present the Fred Allen Show with Fred's guest, Orson Welles. Portland Hopper, Minerva Pyers as Mrs. Nussbaum, Alan Reed as Falstaff Openshaw, Parker Fenley as Titus Moody, the DeMarco sisters, and Al Goodman and his orchestra. And until I show up as Senator Claghorn, my name is Kenny Delmar. This week, ladies and gentlemen, a new book, The Way to Vocabulary, Power, and Culture, was published. We bring you now the new literary lion whose name appears twice in this work. He's Fred Allen.
Thank you. I'm laughing already at last week's show. Now, thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Kenny, I'm really happy that you mentioned Dr. Funk's new tome, The Way to Vocabulary, Power, and Culture. You know, I am now a part-time intellectual. If you ever pass Brentano's, look up. I may be in the window.
Well, have you noticed any difference since your name was mentioned in Dr. Funk's book?
Well, yes, Kenny. I'm the talk of the literary set in subdued voices for the nonce. On Fifth Avenue yesterday, Elsa Maxwell blew me a kiss.
Elsa blew you a kiss?
Yeah, she was a little short-winded. It fell in the gutter, but I went over and rescued it. You know, you should expand your vocabulary, Kenny. Get hep to words like tessellated.
Tessellated, what does it mean?
Well, thanks to Dr. Funk, I am now in a position to tell you, Kenny. Tessellated means adorned with mosaics.
Oh, what does mosaics mean?
Kenny, don't press your luck. I'm only up to page 12 myself. When I get up to the mosaics, you'll hear from me by phone. Don't let me go on.
Mr. Allen!
Let me stand there reading punctuation for a minute. What is new? What's new, Portland?
Mama said your name is in Dr. Funk's new vocabulary book.
That is correct. And I would like to add at this time that Mr. Jack Benny's name does not appear in the book.
Hasn't Jack
arrived? Two people from Waukegan, huh? Well, weather's breaking. Hitchhikers are out again.
Jack a large vocabulary?
Jack a large vocabulary? Two words he uses on his program. Yipe and hmm. You know, Benny takes spelling lessons from Red Skelton.
I think Jack is pretty smart.
Smart?
He's always teaching Phil Harris new words.
Phil Harris? Phil Harris is the moron's messiah. And he is still smarter than Mr. Benny. You know, when Benny finished grammar school, he was so old, instead of a diploma, they gave him a pension.
Mama said you were the only kid in kindergarten with 5 o'clock shadow.
Well, look, when Benny went to school, he had to have a tutor to get through recess. The longest word Mr. Benny knows, you can get out of a no-bo player's mouth sideways.
Do you know any big words?
Big words? Have you ever heard the word tessellated?
Yes. Tessellated means to be adorned with mosaics.
Who asked you what it meant?
Do you want to know what mosaic means?
Never mind. You're reading the book from the back. I can see that. You women are making too much trouble today, Portland. I read that women want equal rights in the world under the UNO.
Mama says behind every successful man, there's a woman.
Oh, poppycock. Who discovered America? A man, Columbus.
Columbus borrowed the money to make the trip from a woman, Queen Isabella.
Who was the first mayor? Well, she's been dead a long time. Nobody knows the word. Who was the first mayor to have his own radio program? A man, Mayor LaGuardia.
How did he reach the microphone?
How?
His wife put him up to it.
Well, touche, and I don't mean that hand lotion, Portland. And speaking of hand lotions, we have a date with a couple of chaps in Allen's Alley.
What is your question tonight?
Well, wait till the page boys laugh. Let them boys. My question this week, the department, I'll be glad when we're working on the street again. People going by laugh. All indoors. It's confusing. Well, this past week, my question, Portland, the Department of Agriculture, concerned about the chicken surplus, called a conference to get housewives to buy more poultry. And so our question this evening is, have you heard about the chicken surplus? And if you have, are you eating more chicken to help reduce it?
Shall we go?
As the saw in the sawmill said to the knot hole, I think I'll buzz along. It's good to get back to Allen's Alley, Portland. Well, I guess the senator's just finished dinner. There's a big catfish head on the lawn. See the flies? Well, let's knock.
Somebody, I say, somebody knock.
Yes, I...
Claghorn's the name, Senator Claghorn, that is.
You're from the South.
When I play bridge, I never sit knock.
Now, wait a minute.
Senator's best, it's Claghorn 6 7/8 to 3.
Now, look, Senator.
I shot a robin this morning.
You shot a robin?
I caught the little feathered traitor flying back from the South.
Oh. Well, tell me, Senator, what is the reaction to this poultry surplus down there in Washington?
Every time I mention chickens, Senator Hatch eggs me on.
Oh, ah! Yeah.
Hatch eggs, that's a jest, son.
I...
Hey, own up, son, you're just a dumb dodo. You're extinct, that is.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get in here. Tell me, Senator, are you doing anything about this chicken surplus?
I'm eating chicken every day.
Good.
I have my own recipe, chicken a la Claghorn.
Chicken a la Claghorn. How do you prepare your fowl, Senator?
First, I soak my chicken overnight in Kentucky bourbon.
Uh-huh.
Me to go on here now. Then I boil it in Louisiana corn.
Yes.
Then I baste it with Mississippi mint julep.
Yes.
Then I leave it in the skillet over a slow fire for 2 days.
And the chicken's ready?
I don't bother with the chicken.
No.
When I get through lapping up that gravy,
yes,
I'm southern fried. Son, son.
Well, the senator certainly knows his culinary stuff. Well, let's see if Mr. Moody is here.
Howdy, Bob.
You look a little tired, Mr. Moody.
Yeah, I had set up all night in the pig pen.
Oh, really?
One of my pigs had ptomaine.
Oh. Well, how could a pig get ptomaine?
I don't know. Must have had a piece of tainted swill or something.
Oh, is something wrong?
Yeah, I got the rheumatism in both arms. Just got a crick.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, doesn't the rheumatism bother you working?
Just milking. I can't move my arms.
Well, how do you milk?
Well, first I sit on the stool.
Yes.
I get a good grip.
I see.
Then I just hold on.
And?
The cow jumps up and down.
Well, tell me, Mr. Moody, what about this chicken surplus?
Oh, there's only one way to stop a chicken surplus. Nip it in the nest.
Nip it in the nest. You mean...
Stop the hens from setting, from having more chickens.
Well, how?
Do what I done last week.
What?
Well, I put a dozen Chinese eggs in one nest.
China eggs? And what happened?
That hen hatched out the prettiest set of demi-tassie cups I ever seen. So long, man.
Well, I've never heard of a hen and her cups before. Oh, well, let's try this next door.
No.
Not Mrs. Nussbaum.
You are expecting maybe Ronald Goldman.
Tell me, Mrs. Nussbaum, are you doing your bit to help reduce the chicken surplus?
I'm sending to Washington a slogan.
Oh, what is your slogan?
The war is over. We're through with bullets. Now is the time. Start cooking pullets.
Very good. Excellent. Are you, beside the slogan, are you using poultry at home?
For every meal in my house, I'm saving chicken.
No kidding.
For breakfast, I'm making Wheaties.
Uh-huh.
Concealed in the Wheaties is chicken gizzards.
Chicken gizzards. You have coffee, too?
Oh, instead of coffee, I'm serving piping hot A cup of chicken fat.
Oh, yum, yum.
For lunch, I'm cooking chicken Chinese style.
Chinese chicken?
This is egg foo young.
Uh-huh.
Instead of the foo, I'm putting in chicken giblets.
Oh, instead of the foo. Well, that should improve the taste. And you serve it Chinese style with chopsticks?
No, with drumsticks.
Oh, with drumsticks. What is for dinner?
Roast chicken stuffed.
Stuffed, huh?
Inside the roast chicken is a boiled chicken.
Oh.
After dinner is coming chicken coffee.
Well, what is chicken coffee?
Instead of sugar, in the coffee I'm dropping two lumps of white meat.
Well, chicken three times a day, isn't your husband complaining?
Complaining? Pierre is wanting even more chicken.
Well, how do you know?
Yesterday, I'm catching him with two blondes. Oh. Thank you.
Well, here we are at the end of Allen's Alley. What can happen at this last shanty?
Hi-ho all, it isn't Rudy Valley. It's the poet laureate of Allen's Alley.
Ah, God, open store. You have new poems for us tonight?
Oh, indubitably. Have you heard, said Mayor O'Dwyer to Mr. Quill, surprise, the subways are running still?
No.
Or, life, said the worm, didn't give me a break. If I was 3 feet longer, I'd be a snake.
No.
Mother's spirits are low, they've almost hit bottom. She knows Gable is back and Garson has got it.
No! This is the straw that sent the camel to the osteopath. Tonight we are discussing the chicken surplus.
I know. I have prepared a poem.
And what is your chicken surplus quatrain called?
In Rebuttal.
In Rebuttal. How does it go?
The rooster flew to the henhouse roof and crowed to the world at large. His message conceived in rebuttal to the chicken surplus charge. We give up our lives, crowed the rooster, and I speak for each chicken and hen who has died and been fried through the ages to grace the tables of men. Today you proclaim there's a surplus, yet to death you continue to doom us. Your cold storage warehouses glutted with fowl and none to consume us. The real reason there's a surplus of poultry is the population has shrunk in New York. So don't go around blaming us chickens. Go take it up with the stork.
Thank you, Falstaff.
That's Falstaff Openshaw there. And you know who played that part, Lisa? Alan Reed, who was the voice of Fred Flintstone. He was in a ton of radio shows.
It still sounds like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, he was Pasquale on Life with Luigi and many, many other roles. This is we're tuning into the Fred Allen Show. Orson Welles is the special guest. You'll hear him when we come back from the news. But right now, we have to play some commercials. We'll be back here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. in the morning. And my co-host is the lovely Lisa Wolf, the woman with a smile in her voice. She has very big dimples. And she has a perfect smile because she uses a water pick, like I do. Yeah. And Water Pick's not even a sponsor of ours.
No, we wish it was, though.
Oh, I'd love it.
Water
love
Pick.
It. But we use a Water Pick.
We use a lot of other things that make your smile good.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's a little attitude.
I'm not sure how this happened, but a couple of years ago, I was like, you said, I'm going to buy you something. Yeah, you had bought a Water Pick.
I already had one.
You bought a Water Pick, and you were liking it so much, you were like, and she knows that I'm a, you know.
What do you call yourself? Crazy?
I don't know. Well, yeah, very crazy. But
obsessed?
I'm obsessed with my teeth, yeah. And she was like, I've got something for you.
Yeah.
And then she bought me a Water Pick.
But you opened my eyes to the tongue brusher.
Yes.
That you did for me. Well, of course, you didn't buy it for me, though, and it was like $1.99, and you still didn't buy
that
for me.
Listen, I'm a big spender.
Yeah, well, you know.
But I did. I spent $1.99 on you, Lisa.
No, you didn't. That's what I'm saying. You didn't buy it. You told me to buy it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well.
And I did.
You know?
Yeah, well.
Well, you make the big bucks over here.
I know. You got to be thrifty.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, Lisa, we're listening to Fred Allen. I do want to remind our listeners, though, that we have a Facebook page for this program. It's WGN Radio Theater, so go to Facebook and just search WGN Radio Theater, and please like us. We haven't asked you to do that in a long time. We'd really love to build our likes. And then there's all kinds of pictures on there. We put the pictures of the radio stars up there. It's a lot of fun. Check out our Facebook page. We also have a website, which is WGNRadioTheater.com. Is there anything else we need to tell our audience before we get back to Friday?
Yeah, or you can always text us. We're always watching our texts at 312-981-7200.
A listener texted us a few minutes ago and asked, who is the actor playing Senator Claghorn? The answer to that is Kenny Delmar. Kenny Delmar did a lot of radio in New York. He was a New York actor, did Fred Allen and a lot of other New York radio shows. And he did a lot of voiceover stuff for cartoons, although he did not play Foghorn Leghorn, which was based on the Senator Claghorn character from the Fred Allen Show, the Foghorn Leghorn cartoons, the Looney Tunes. I think they were they Looney Tunes or Warner Brothers? I'm not sure. But I believe that was Mel Blanc that did the voice of that, not Kenny Delmar. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, you think I'm completely nuts, let's just get back to this Fred Allen Show. All right, so let's listen to the conclusion. You'll hear Orson Welles popping up on this. Here's the Fred Allen Show.
And now from the foul fall to roll of Falstaff, we turn with pleasure to the Chickory Chick Choir, the five DeMarco sisters, accompanied by Maestro Al Goodman and his surplice symphonist, the DeMarco sing Atlanta, GA.
I love the morning glories growing, the breeze is softly blowing in Atlanta, GA. I love to wake up in the morning, see the sun come up the dawning in Atlanta, GA. I love to walk among the flowers and taste the honey from the bees. I want to while away my hours reading books and dreaming dreams beneath the trees. I want to see the ivy clinging, hear the robin singing little songs I adore. I want to attend the Sunday meeting, hear the friendly greeting when I get home once more. I long to have that certain someone, I miss him more each day. I'm getting ready for a wedding, gonna get the train to setting for Atlanta, GA. I wanna see the ivy clinging, wanna hear the robin singing, wanna attend the Sunday meeting, wanna hear the friendly greeting when I get home once more.
I long to hold that certain someone, I miss him more each day.
I'm getting ready for a wedding, gonna get the train to setting, and for Atlanta, GA, Atlanta, GA.
Say, Portland.
Yes?
You know, we have to get busy. Our guest tonight is Orson Welles. Is the gold mesh carpet ready?
The gold carpet is ready?
Yeah.
The man from Tiffany's brought the jade microphone.
The jade microphone. I told him the turquoise microphone. Get the preparation we have to make for Orson.
Did you rehearse the Orson Welles fanfare?
Oh, gosh, I forgot. Mr. Goodman, with that special Orson Welles fanfare, have your men chew on a little sensen before they blow their trumpets. Mr. Welles likes to smell something as he comes on. In fact, I would... Hey, this must be Orson now. Mr. Goodman, the fanfare, please. Stop it, please. You're not Orson Welles.
No, I'm Mr. Welles' personal psychiatrist.
Yes?
I'm afraid Mr. Welles cannot appear on your program tonight.
Can't appear?
No, Mr. Welles is suffering from a complete breakdown of personality.
But, doctor, you are a doctor.
In some states, yes.
Doctor, you mean the great Orson Welles, the brash, impetuous exhibitionist?
Today, he is a cringing, beaten milquetoast.
Oh, what happened?
It was that role he played in his new picture, Tomorrow is Forever.
Yes?
He appeared as Eric Kessler, a frustrated elderly Dutchman.
Yes?
It took 8 months to make the picture. For 8 months, Mr. Welles lived as Eric Kessler.
Uh-huh.
He still thinks he's Kessler.
Eric Kessler?
He has Kessler's Dutch dialect. He has Kessler's inferiority complex.
Orson Welles with an inferiority complex? I can't believe it, Doctor.
Oh, you must help him, Mr. Allen. I have Mr. Welles in a rest home on 52nd Street.
Uh-huh. But Doctors Leon and Eddie's the place I've seen. What can I...
If you could induce Mr. Wells to face an audience again, he might conquer his phobia.
I shall do it. Let's go to the rest home, Doctor. Let's go.
This is Mr. Wells' room.
But there's no one in here, Doctor.
Shh, quiet. Mr. Wells is hiding in the closet again. Be careful, Mr. Allen. If you upset him, this Kessler complex returns. He starts talking Dutch. Good luck, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Doctor. Gad, a pitiful case. Orson Welles hiding in a closet. Orson! Orson! Come out of the closet, Orson! Nobody'll hurt you. Come out, Orson! Ah, the door is opening.
Yes, please?
Orson Welles! Orson! You remember me, Fred Allen?
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Look, Orson.
Excuse, please. The name is Eric. Eric Kessler.
But, Orson, I'm your old friend.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Orson, you must snap out of it.
Oh, everything is so confused.
Think hard. Back in the dim, hazy past, you knew a man named Orson Welles.
Orson Welles.
Think. Think.
Orson Welles. I seem to recall. Orson Welles used to walk down Fifth Avenue with a marmoset riding his arm side saddle.
Uh-huh.
A fawn prancing by his side and 20 giant butterflies on silken leashes flew ahead, spelling out the name Orson.
I saw Orson Welles one day carrying a cane. It was the hind leg of a gazelle.
Orson used to strut into the automat, stand in front of those little windows and say, "Open." Every single window would fly open.
Well, listen, Mr. Kessler. That man with the 20 butterflies and the hind leg of the gazelle was you. You were Orson Welles. You're still Orson Welles, star of stage, screen, and radio.
Fred.
Yes?
You left out television.
Ah! That's the old Orson, the old blowhard coming back.
You mean I'm not Kessler, the weakling? I am Orson Welles, the blowhard?
Yes. You have got to convince yourself. Say to yourself, I am Orson Welles.
I am Orson Welles.
Good, good. Say it again. I am the great Orson Welles.
I am the great Orson Welles.
Let it ring out.
I am the great Orson Welles.
You're cured. The old power, the old ego. The old ham is back. Now you know who you are.
I am Eric Kessler.
Orson.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Orson, you're slipping. Orson.
Oh, it's no use, Fred. It's nice of you to try and help, but now if you'll excuse me, I'll go back into my little old closet.
Now, Orson, we can conquer this complex. If you'd give one performance in public, your past would return. A long time ago, we did a play together, remember?
Oh, yes, it was Les Miserables.
Let's do it again.
Oh, Fred, I'm frightened.
Buck up, Orson.
All right, if you insist, I'll do the play on one condition.
Yes, Orson.
You must be the star. You must do all the acting.
All the acting.
Just let me appear for a second, no more.
Good.
Yes.
If you only speak one line, it will bolster your courage. Now, as we start, you can announce the play.
Fred, it means mentioning my own name. I'm afraid.
Steel yourself. You must conquer this inferiority complex. You can do it, Orson. Music, Mr. Goodman.
Les Miserables. Is that all right? Can I go ahead?
All right, go ahead, Orson.
Victor Hugo's immortal story of a soul transfigured and redeemed through suffering. This is an Orson Welles production.
Radio version of Les Miserables prepared by...
Orson Welles.
Directed by...
Orson Welles.
Starring...
Orson Welles. Orson Welles will be assisted by...
Now hold it. Wait a minute.
Fred, did you hear I said my name? I said my name.
And you said it plenty, too. What about my name?
Well, I announced you, Fred. The music cut in too quickly.
Now watch that music, Mr. Goodman. Orson, you said you wanted me to be the star of the play. Now, if you're going to take all the credit... Orson.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
He's slipping again.
I am Eric Kessler.
No, you are Orson Welles.
That's right, I am. I'm Orson Welles.
Well, what happened?
You raised your voice to me, Fred. Remember my condition.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's start the play.
The play? The play? What play?
Les Miserables, you remember?
Yes, yes. I am Jean Valjean, the hunted convict. Yes. You are Javert, the detective, that merciless minion of the law, always on my trail.
Yes.
You do all the acting.
All the acting. Yes. I'm the star. Yes. You just come on for a second.
That's right.
Fine, let's go.
The first scene is a dingy garret in the slums of Paris. As the story opens, I, Jean Valjean, am hiding out. I think I have escaped you.
Uh-huh.
As we first see Jean Valjean, he is soliloquizing.
At last, Jean Valjean, you are safe. There is no cause to fear this Javert who has hounded you so long. Javert, your nemesis, that merciless bloodhound, always in pursuit of you, has finally thrown off the track, completely baffled. But hark, that sound upon the stairs, footsteps, those same plodding footsteps. Uh-huh. Javert, what is to be done? Ah, this window. Jean Valjean will never be taken. Goodbye, Javert!
Now, wait a minute, wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. Stop the music, Mr. Goodman.
Fred, did you hear that? That was I, the old Orson Welles. I'm not afraid anymore.
No, now I'm starting to get a little frightened. Now, look, Orson.
Later, Fred. Now we start the second scene.
Never mind the second scene. What about the first scene?
Oh, it was wonderful, Fred. I'm getting that old feeling again.
And I'm getting that old business again. Orson, you said I was going to be the star.
But you are the star, Fred. What stole that whole scene?
What?
It was that knock on the door. And who knocked on that door? Javert.
Never mind Javert.
Well, you motivate the entire story. If you hadn't knocked at that door, I'd still be in the garret. We'd have no play.
Now, don't give me that. I'm supposed to do all the acting. I haven't even had one line.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Take it easy, Orson.
Or watch that, Fred.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I will. Well, what happens now?
Well, in the second scene, you dominate the whole thing. I am just a stooge.
A stooge. Well, that's more like it. What is the second scene?
Well, it's years later. This time, you, Javert, have me trapped. Cosette Fabantou, a demimonde, is concealing me in the back room of a bistro. I, Jean Valjean, am pacing up and down.
Jean, will you stop pacing? Toujours up and down.
This is the end, Cosette, my farewell to freedom. Instead of liberty, waits the galley crew, the iron collar, the chain at my foot, the dungeon, the plank bed, all the horrors I know so well. To submit morning and evening to the hammer of the roundsman who tests the fetters. Time is short. The net is tightening. Javert.
Quick, Jean Valjean. Through the trap door.
Merci, Cosette. Jean Valjean will never be taken again. Au revoir, Javert.
Now hold it. Hold it. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Stop the music. Now look, Orson.
You were magnificent.
Never mind that.
You stole that scene right out from under my nose.
Now look, let me tell you.
Gab, that suspense, man.
Orson, please.
I've seen Javert played 100 times. The Theater Guild, Moscow Art Theater, at Grossinger's. Van Johnson has played Javert. But I've never heard a Javert get the tone out of that police whistle that you got tonight.
Now, look, Orson, I don't mind playing the schnook to help restore your ego. But now my ego is going. In two acts, all I've done is knock on a door and blow a whistle.
Were you ever...
All right. The next... go ahead with the play.
The next scene is all yours, Fred. As you started to say, you trail me through the sewers of Paris.
Uh-huh.
You finally corner me single-handed. And there we stand, face to face. I just have a few words, and then you speak.
I finally speak. Well, it's about time. Let's go.
Mon Dieu, hell situation. Alone in this sewer. Wrapped like a rat. The gloomy darkness. This narrow archway above me head. These two slimy corridor walls. But hark, that's sloshing through the muck. Last you cornered me, Javert. Don't talk, Javert. Before you seal my doom, I would speak for the last time. You will never take Jean Valjean alive, Javert. The water in this sewer is rising. I am 6 feet 9. You, Javert, are 4 feet too. The water rises. No, no, not yet, Javea. Don't speak. The water, higher, higher, higher. Now, Javea, you have Jean Valjean at your mercy. Pronounce my doom. Now, Javea, speak. Speak.
Now, before we pack away the tenderleaf tea and blue bonnet margarine for tonight, here's a final word from Fred Allen.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Thank you, Eric Kessler.
No. Guten Nacht, alles.
That is the Fred Allen Show, good comedy from March 3rd, 1946. Fred Allen with Portland Hoffa, all his gang, and special guest Orson Welles, who we have been spotlighting on this edition, program 66 of the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a break, then it's more. All right, we have Nick DiGilio joining us. What's up, Nick?
Hey, hang on, I got a cut for Nick right here.
You got a cut for
me? Got something? Okay.
Yeah! Very nice. Did you see it, Dan?
I did not see it yet. I'm going Wednesday.
Okay. Well, Everybody Wants Some is obviously a Van Halen song.
Yes.
It is also the name of Richard Linklater's new movie.
Oh.
Which is a spiritual sequel to one of my favorite movies in the history of movies, Dazed and Confused. And it is, I saw it Thursday night, and it's one of the best movies, one of the very best movies of the year.
Well, he's an amazing, amazing director.
He is. Yeah, and if you're a fan of Dazed and Confused, and I know Dan is, it's a great movie. We're going to review it in full. Colin and Eric and I are going to review it in full
in just
a few minutes. But
awesome.
I loved every frame of it. I thought it was great.
And, you know, I got to tell you, I was thinking of you when I was in the movie theater. I saw Batman versus Superman. It was horrible.
Oh.
It was so bad.
2 hours and 40 minutes, you're never going to get it back.
What happened? I mean, this is like a, what, $300 million movie or something? I mean, they must have spent tons of money on
it. We'll talk about the box office, too, because, you know, it dropped over 60% from last week. And that's, you know, because it sucks and word of mouth is getting around.
I have been dying to see this. Well, you know, I'm a huge Batman, Superman fan, as you are, I know. I couldn't believe how bad this
movie was. Me neither, man.
I was sitting in the movie theater going, what is the deal here?
Yeah, it's a train wreck. You know, and I know there's a lot of, some people are defending it, some people like it, which I can't even comprehend, from the beginning of the movie, from the first scene in the movie, which is completely illogical and makes no sense. It just gets dumber as it goes along.
It's
and this
so
thing is
bad.
Over 2.5 hours long.
It's oh my gosh.
It's a terrible movie.
Well, you know, I literally felt like I was, you know, robbed.
Oh,
when
yeah.
I left there.
No, it's
I was
terrible.
Like,
but I will say this. I will say this just to give a little hope. There are two movies that we're going to review coming up a little bit later on that I think are two of the very best movies of the year that at the end of the year, and I know it's only April, but at the end of the year, probably going to be in my top five. These two movies.
Fantastic.
That just came out.
Well, I'll be listening, Nick. Yeah. Way to go. I will definitely be listening. And anything else?
My dad.
Yeah.
Telling a joke.
And
we'll replay the Blackhawks Express from yesterday's game, and that could take the whole show.
Right, and very cool.